the approach of the evening, that kind of darkness incites the gopis with a strong desire to meet with Krishna. And in this way, Krishna's pastimes are covered by a kind of transcendental darkness, which makes them impossible for ordinary scholars of the Vedas to understand. Because Krishna, especially in his intimate pastimes of love, can only be understood by devotion. No amount of scholarship or empiric research will ever reveal the true nature of Sri Krishna. He reserves the right to reveal himself only to those devotees whose eyes are anointed with the salve of love. So how to develop that love? Krishna states very clearly in Bhagavad Gita in so many different ways. Man mana bhavana bhakto aditi mam namaskuru mam nivaishyasi satyam te pratijano priyosi me. That one can understand me as I am only by pure devotional service. When one's heart is pure through such devotion, then he can enter into the kingdom of God, and not until then. So how to purify the heart? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, always think of me, become my devotee, bow down to me, offer your homage unto me, and this way you'll come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. But that knowledge remained primarily theoretical. And Krishna could see after 4,500 years, actually not many people were remembering him. Not many people were bowing down before him, offering their homage unto him and coming to him. And this made Krishna very sad. Although Krishna is Atmaram, he's fully self-satisfied, and he doesn't really need anything from anyone. He has expanded himself as innumerable jivas, tiny portions of his potency, his internal potency, which is meant to give him pleasure. That divine devotional energy which is personified by Srimati Radharani in its fullest, purest, and most beautiful form is that same potency from which we, the jivas, have emanated. So how much love can we give to Krishna? And how much can we receive? We're limited in every way. But if we become servant, of those who have that exalted Mahabhav, then by their mercy, as intercessors, through whom our devotion flows to Krishna, and through whom his grace is bestowed upon us, then we can dive deep into an endless ocean of prema by their mercy. But it is not possible by our own endeavors. So, seeing that the living entities were being devoured by the poisonous effects of this serpent-like Kali, the personification of degradation and sin, quarrel, whose symptoms are quarrel and hypocrisy, prevalent everywhere in this age. Instead, they become ensnared in Maya and are suffering. And it is not a fact that the Lord does not suffer. He told Haridas Thakur he was in great anxiety, thinking about the suffering of all living entities, how they can be delivered. And therefore the Lord dispatches his dearmost servants to reclaim the fallen souls, knowing that nothing brings Krishna so much pleasure as to have the lost souls come home to him. That sentiment is reflected in every Shastra, in the Bible, the story of the prodigal son, who gave the father more pleasure when he returned than even the good sons who had never left. It is such a joy to Krishna when one of his lost sons or daughters is returned to him. And therefore, Krishna says that there's no one so dear, nor will anyone ever be so dear as one who preaches this message to the devotees. Of course, Krishna sees everyone as devotees. In the spiritual world, there's no need to preach. There are already devotees. But Krishna sees everyone, even in the material world, as devotees. Because inherently they are. But they've forgotten their actual nature and become mad in illusion and forgetfulness of Krishna. So, after that discourse between Kali and Kalami, and his commanders and generals, lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy. And then there was the Sankirtan, which drove them all away. See, that's the forces of evil and darkness. Then appear the forces of good and light, Bhakti Devi, with her sons, Gyan and Vairagya. Gyan, who will translate in this sense as conscience, in Vairagya, renunciation. And they were very tired. They had traveled throughout the length and breadth of Bharatvarsha. And Gyan, conscience, was see, Gyan and Vairagya, they're the offspring of Bhakti Devi. And Gyan was revealing his heart to Bhakti Devi, I can't go on like this. Since we left Vrindavan, I found nowhere to take shelter. I want to take shelter in the heart of some pure-hearted living entity, but I can't find one. I've gone everywhere. I've gone to the caves. And seeing the sages meditating in the caves from a distance, I thought, here I can take shelter. Here's one meditating on the Supreme Lord. But as I got close and saw his actual heart, I saw it was not clean and pure at all. He was not thinking of the Lord. He was thinking only of his own salvation. So then I approached some philanthropists who appeared to be very kind-hearted and want to do good for all the people. But then, when I looked into his heart, thinking I could find shelter there, I saw that he didn't really care about doing good for the people. He wanted a name and fame for himself. And he was also very selfish. His heart also filled with envy. And to propagate his philanthropic work and get lots of support and admiration of his fellow men, he even wrote books on the topic, saying that actually it's faith in God that causes the sufferings of the people, and I will relieve that suffering myself. And I was horrified. I couldn't find shelter anywhere. Nowhere is there such a clean and pure heart where I could take shelter. And then his brother, Vairagya, he confirmed it. Everything he said was true. And the scientists who claim to be doing good for mankind, they're simply sending missiles and spaceships throughout the universe, disrupting the natural harmony of things. So we're so tired, we can't find shelter anywhere. Finally, they returned to Vrindavan. And there, Bhakti Devi regained her youth and began dancing as a beautiful young girl. But Gyan and Vairagya, they remained very old, just on the verge of death. So she summoned Narada Muni to come and recite the Vedas and Puranas and Itihasas. But to no avail. Gyan and Vairagya seemed to be almost dead. Conscience and renunciation were nowhere to be found in this world. And they found no place to take shelter. Then, the Varshi Narada, understanding the secret, narrated the Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful story of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And upon concluding that beautiful narration, which brings life to the soul and cleanses the heart, Srimad Swakata Krishna Puni Shravana Kirtana Vedanti Stohya Vidrani Vidanti Sridhana. Then Gyan and Vairagya regained their youth and their life, enlivened by the pastimes of the Lord, which saved their lives, literally. So, in the beautiful Leela of Sri Krishna, there's 8 time periods throughout the day, which corresponds to the 8 offerings
and the 8 artics we offer. Krishna is performing different pastimes in different periods of the day. During the day, he's herding the cows. And in the evening, the dust raised from the hooves of the cows and the calves indicates that kind of darkness in the sky indicates Krishna's coming home. And what is night to materialistic vision is day to enlightened sage and vice versa. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan become enlightened, Krishna's returning home. And then about this time, about sunset time, and Mother Jasoda puts Krishna to rest. And Queen Kirtita puts Radha to rest. And they're feeling very happy, thinking their children are resting soundly. But actually they're lying wide awake, thinking of each other. And then through a trap door in Vishwamitra's palace, Sri Radha emerges into the forest, and Krishna leaves Nanda's sprawling city. And they meet at Sanket, right in between, halfway between Nandagam and Vaishana, and enjoy their evening pastimes. So, the different ragas we sing at the different periods of the day correspond to the moods of the devotees who partake in those mellows of love. So, how to purify the heart, how to make it so clean and pure that Krishna will reside there, how to have the heart so filled with Krishna's love that no envy can enter and give rise to all kinds of infections of lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion. By keeping the heart filled with devotional enthusiasm, by always meditating on the pastimes of Krishna and chanting his holy names. And then, the offspring of Kali, who are by a fear and mritya death, it will not affect us. Everyone has to pay his dues in this world. Death comes to everyone, but to do it, a devotee, that is not a cause for fear or horror. It is simply new life. When the kirtan was raging at Srivas Thakur's house, none of the ladies were sitting on the veranda as they usually did. They were all crowded in one of the huts. And then, at the window of the house, one of the ladies appeared, signaled to Srivas, come quickly. He went and saw that the cholera from which his son was suffering had taken a turn for the worst. And even the doctor had given up hope, and the ladies were lamenting. And he told them, no, save your lamentation for a few hours. Don't disturb the Lord's kirtan. And then he went back and joined the kirtan. About 9 hours later, the Lord stopped the kirtan and said, I'm not feeling any joy in this kirtan. Has there been some calamity? And he looked at Srivas. And Srivas, no problem. And the Lord, something's wrong. I'm feeling some sorrow. What happened? And then Advaita Acharya explained that, well, Srivas is a humble soul. He does not want to hurt you in any way, but the fact is his one and only son died about 9 hours ago during the kirtan. He didn't want to disturb you. And then the Lord looked at Srivas. Why didn't you tell me? My Lord, I didn't want to disturb you. I didn't want to hurt you. But, I mean, it's no mishap to me. It's no cause of grief. I mean, how could he be more fortunate? He died in the household where you were propagating the holy names. The holy name which frees one from all sin and sorrow and fear of death was being propagated in my home by you personally. That fate for which the greatest yogis and devotees pray has been granted to my son. Why should I lament? Rather, I'm feeling great joy. That by your mercy, he's been allowed such a great fortune. And hearing that, the Lord began to cry. And then Srivas said, no, my Lord. I can tolerate 10 million such mishaps, no problem. But I cannot bear to see tears in your eyes. Please don't cry at me, Maria. And the Lord said, how could I ever give up such devotees as you? And then the devotees were shocked. What does it mean, Mother? What does it mean? What's he talking about, giving up our association? Is he going to leave us? And then they all began to lament. They all began to cry. And when they got the idea later on, even Sri Gadadhar, who would never challenge the Lord, he challenged them, how can you leave us? How can you forsake us? And the Lord, who was always very gentle with Gadadhar, just looked at him with piercing eyes. Don't challenge our decision. The Lord knew because there was some envy in the inhabitants of Nadia. They were envious of his success and glory. So if they become envious of me, they'll be destroyed. How will I disarm if I become a beggar sannyasi and enter into the penance of the austere life? That, and then approach them for alms, that'll certainly disarm them. And they'll show me the proper respect. So the Lord knew what he had to do. Anyway, everyone was enlightened, hearing such transcendental words from Srivas about how his son, by the mercy of the holy name, attained the ultimate goal. But the ladies were still lamenting, and the Lord felt pain for them. So he said, bring the son to me. So they carried him in on a stretcher. And the Lord looked at the boy and said, how can you leave Srivas's house? And the boy sat right up and said, my Lord, I'm just your servant. Why is everybody lamenting? I've given up this life for a better life. I've given up my life during the kirtan, propagated by you personally. I can't imagine any greater source of joy or happiness. Why is everybody lamenting? Then he laid back down and left his body again. And everybody thought, yeah, why are we lamenting? We're just thinking about ourselves. If we were thinking about him, we'd be happy. He's gone back to the spiritual world. And then they continue to cure them with no problem. So, how to develop love? To drive out all envy? Love enters through the ears and is expressed through the lips. A man's heart is revealed by what he talks about and what he chants about. And there's no more blessed thing a man could do than sing of his love and express it to everyone. So this is about the time of day when Krishna would be looking for some auspicious omen, like a double rainbow in the sky, or a smile on the face of the moon, or big clouds with lots of lightning but no thunder. And that was the signal to go to Sanket, the meeting place. So our joy, our ultimate experience of love, is in assisting Krishna in reuniting with his lost servants and bringing them back into that divine dance of love. So that should be our meditation. What is Krishna doing now? And the different ragas and raginis, which express those different sentiments of love, and help us enter into those moods and those pastimes.